The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, welcome to a Friday. As Vermont Gina says in the chat room, is it, in response to my happy Friday, everyone welcome message, she says, is it? I'm back in freaking out mode. Even my anxiety butterflies have anxiety today. I'm there with you. This is my regular state of being these days. You know, on Fridays, I always look forward to an email from Vice News. They put together a weekend email in one sentence, the sort of the week in review in one sentence. So here's what came today. It's week 55 of the Trump administration in one sentence. Got to take a deep breath in. President Trump declassified the Republicans' infamous memo that supposedly offered proof of FBI bias in the Russia investigation, referred to himself in the third person when he tweeted the memo, quote, totally vindicates Trump, intensified his feud with the intelligence community by claiming the Russia probe favors Democrats, suggested Democrats who didn't applaud during his State of the Union address may have committed treason, dealt with some embarrassing split screens when he gave a speech about the booming American economy as the Dow experienced its biggest single-day drop ever, christened Democratic Representative, quote, Little Adam Schiff, who wrote a secret counter memo in response to Republicans that Trump must now decide whether to declassify, embrace the idea of another government shutdown if he doesn't get his way on immigration, either fired or accepted a resignation from one of his top aides after allegations surfaced that he beat two ex-wives, told the Pentagon that he wants a military parade, a big one with tanks, praised the budget deal, which would add hundreds of billions to defense spending, and eventually signed that deal after a five-hour shutdown. Whew. And it's not over yet. It's only 3:03 p.m. here on the East Coast. And one thing that's supposed to happen today is Trump is to decide whether or not he'll release that Democratic response memo to the Nunes FISA memo. Haven't heard anything on it, but you know, that's not always, you know, unusual, especially in this Trump world, because things come flying out of the ether at all hours. I don't know about you. I didn't sleep a whole lot last night because I was up watching what was going on in the Senate and then in the House with a shutdown. Rand Paul, talk about a hypocrite, and the media today is fawning all over him for being honest about the debt and the deficit. Meanwhile, Rand Paul voted for that tax scam bill that added $1.5 trillion to the deficit. So why he's all of a sudden up in arms about this, I don't know, but he is. And so he caused a little mini shutdown last night. The only good news about it is that they can't blame the Democrats for it. Now, the Democrats could have been blamed for another shutdown, but they gave in. So the president signed the deal at about 8:30 this morning. So the shutdown that happened overnight is no longer in effect. And there's some money there for good things. So I guess we should be happy about that. The Dreamers are still up in the air, and the White House chief of staff, is, you know, who has said that he wouldn't recommend that the president extend the DACA deadline, the artificially imposed DACA deadline of March 5th, should no solution come up between now and then. He's in his own bit of self-imposed trouble today. There's an article on the Washington Post. This all has to do with this Rob Porter guy. But the Washington Post has a devastating article just up a few hours ago that White House Chief of Staff John Kelly this morning instructed senior staff to communicate a version of events about the departure of Staff Secretary Rob Porter that contradicts the administration's previous accounts. In other words, is a total lie, is complete and utter bullshit. During a staff meeting this morning, Kelly told those in attendance to say that he took action to remove Porter within 40 minutes of learning that abuse allegations from two ex-wives were credible, according to officials who spoke on the condition of anonymity because discussions in such meetings are supposed to be confidential. He told the staff he took immediate and direct action, one of the officials said, adding that people after the meeting expressed disbelief with one another and felt his latest account was not true. This is stunning. That version of events contradicts both the public record and accounts from numerous other White House officials in recent days as the Porter drama unfolded. Kelly, who first learned of the domestic violence allegations against Porter months ago, issued a glowing statement in support of Porter for his in support of Porter's personal character after the allegations first surfaced publicly Tuesday, and privately urged him to remain on the job until the next day when his resignation was announced. At today's meeting, Kelly also told subordinates to convey to other White House aides that he cares about domestic violence, according to the officials. Right. White House spokesman declined to comment on Kelly's message at the staff meeting. It goes on from there. But it is just unbelievable. And it reminds me, I'm not usually a big Chuck Todd fan. But I do tend to watch his MTP Daily in the afternoon because it's a good roundup of the day's news. And yesterday he opened the show with an almost Howard Beale moment that I just had to pull and play for you.
I'm not going to go full Howard Beale here, but it's close. It feels like we've reached a level of crazy in this White House, and it's difficult to take it anymore. Reality TV appearances, tabloid gossip, conspiracy theories, name-calling, vulgarities, and a level of egomania few have ever seen in Washington. And that's saying something. It's like we're living inside a parody from 3 years ago. Consider, what would happen if Donald Trump became president? Omarosa would probably work in the West Wing, and then she'd leave to go on Big Brother to dish about administration secrets.
Ha ha ha.
Oh, wait. That actually happened on Big Brother Celebrity Edition. Airing tonight.
Last night.
I felt
this
like
was yesterday.
It was like a call to duty. I felt like I was serving my country, not serving him. Whenever was it accepting a political appointment, it was always about the country. Like, I was haunted by tweets every single day. Like, what is he going to tweet next?
Does anybody say to him, what are you doing?
I mean, I tried to be that person, and then all of the people around him attacked me. It was like, keep her away from me. Don't give her access. Don't let her talk to him. And it's like
we trust her.
It's there. And it's...
Should we be worried?
Don't say that.
Because we are worried, but I need you to say no, it's going to be okay.
Okay. No, it's going to not be okay. It's not.
Now let's leave aside the fact that Omarosa made those comments on a show named after George Orwell's dystopian surveillance state.
Yep.
Folks, we're not even surprised by this stuff anymore. Just think about what we've seen or endured in the last 13 months of this presidency. The Twitter battles with a rival nuclear power, members of his own party, the special counsel, TV host, a Gold Star widow, the Justice Department, mayors, senators, governors, our allies, and many people in between. How about the conspiracy theories? Obama wiretapped me. I won the popular vote. Russian meddling's a hoax. The deep state, Justice Department, and who knows? Maybe the Access Hollywood tape is a fake, too. The immorality, racist language about immigrants from asshole countries defending neo-Nazis, endorsing child molester for U.S. Senate. The ego, the dear leader-style cabinet meetings, talk of a military parade, the inaugural crowd sizes, alternative facts, bragging about his election win all the time, from the CIA memorial wall to the Boy Scout Jamboree. How about the vulgarities? The White House communications director publicly accusing another White House advisor of trying to, shall we say, perform a sex act on himself. Other advisors constantly dishing about their own president, including a cabinet secretary reportedly calling him a moron. How about the cliffhangers saying, tune in next time to see what happens on NAFTA, staff shakeups, Oval Office recordings, talking to Mueller, a government shutdown, even nuclear war. And then there's the tabloid fodder. Who's sleeping with who in the White House? His now public affair with a porn star or porn supporting actress, allegedly paying her off to keep quiet. And then just this week, White House Staff Secretary Rob Porter resigned after allegations surfaced on a British gossip site, no less, of domestic abuse involving two ex-wives. And the White House statements defending him came from a press shop run by the woman he's rumored to be dating. All of this is the legacy of our country's first reality TV star.
Reality TV star president is what got cut off there at the end. Look, that was Chuck Todd, who is one of the best at both siderisms, as at making excuses for this president and for, you know, things that generally go against the grain of what I firmly believe in. But when even he gets to that point, Vermont, Gina in the chat room, you are so not alone. When he reaches that level of unbelievable-ledness, we're all going over that cliff together. And we're only 55 weeks in. It's a sad place to be. I don't know. We've got Alex Lawson coming on the show today. You may have heard Alex Lawson fill in for Tom Hartman before. He's been on this program, but not for a few years. He's the executive director of Social Security Works, and he's participating in this event that I'm joining in on next week. I will not be here next Friday, a week from today, because I'll be taking part in the Florida Healthcare Summit. So we're going to talk to Alex about what Social Security has to do with healthcare and the future of our healthcare system in this country, and what we're trying to do, among other things. Before we get to Alex, though, we're gonna talk to Tara Devlin of the Tara Buster podcast, just because she's also on Progressive Voices and she's on GDPR, and she's funny, and I want to find out how she copes with the stress. So we'll check in with her in just a couple of minutes, okay? But first, we'll check in with Jim Hightower for a little bit of a sanity break.
Why do so many Americans hate Trump's new highly ballyhooed tax cut law? I'll tell you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. It's odd that Washington Republicans are so loudly crowing about their passage of a Trump-McConnell-Ryan tax law. Odd because the people outside of Washington hate that law. Yes, hate. With a public approval rating of only 30%, the GOP's trillion-dollar giveaway to multinational corporations and multimillionaires turns out to be Congress's second most disliked domestic law in the past quarter century, second only to the multiple attempts by Trump, McConnell, and Ryan last year to take away the health care coverage of 23 million Americans, a move so mingy that 77% of the public opposed it. Why do those doofuses keep trying to shove such wildly unpopular measures down people's throats? Because, as Daily Beast columnist Michael Tomasky succinctly explained, quote, they are serving their mega-rich donors and the most extreme elements of their base. Yes, in today's rigged political system, the special interests of a tiny minority trump the will of the great majority. Since the GOP's tax bill drastically reduced corporate taxes and increased many of ours, a few corporations are trying to dodge public fury by pulling a trickle-down trick on us. They're awarding a tiny portion of their bonanza to workers, not as pay raises, but as one-time, quote, bonus payments. Bank of America, for example, is doling out $145 million in worker bonuses while pocketing $2.6 billion it will get this year alone from the tax cut. In addition, the tax boondoggle for corporate giants guts our public treasury, so Washington Republicans and their army of corporate lobbyists are now demanding cuts in our Social Security, Medicare, and other safety net programs. This is Jim Hightower saying that is where America's inequality comes from. If the corporate GOP syndicate wonders why they're so despised, there it is.
If you'd like more of Jim Hightower's real populism, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter gives you the real lowdown on which corporations, by name, are doing what to the middle class, our environment, and our democracy. Each month, the Hightower Lowdown brings you facts you didn't know, along with actions you can take to fight back. It also comes with a sense of humor. Hightower believes we can fight the gods and still have fun. Plus, get this, it's cheap. Only $15 brings you 12 issues a year. For real populism, go to hightowerlowdown.org.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, Nicole Sandler back with you here on the Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network, on GDPR, a number of other outlets that carry the show, FYI Nation. Thank you for being along for the ride. You know, I like to share the wealth, learn about other people who are out doing other shows, and trying to figure out how they're keeping their sanity. So I decided to call on Tara Devlin. Now, she's a New York City-based comedian, writer, and founder of RTD Daily. Her weekly podcast, Tara Buster, is recorded live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Facebook and YouTube, and is heard on Progressive Voices and GDPR Revolution 99, Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern. Tara Devlin joins us now. Hey, Tara.
Hey, how you doing? How's everybody doing? You're right. It takes a lot of emotional strength to get us through the Trump years, the new Gilded Age, whatever you want to call it. It's really stressful. That's for sure.
Yeah, we are stressing.
We need each other.
We had Vermont Gina in the chat room commenting that today she's got having one of those days where the stress is just out of hand. And I realized I'm kind of that way every day these days.
Right.
So how do you deal? Yeah. How do you deal with it with a sense of humor? How do you get through find the humor in the insanity?
Right. Well, I feel like I'm just angry a lot. And tapping into it is funny. Now, my comedy is not really political. If you saw my stand up, it's more like just about how my life sucks and whatnot, you know. And that's why I really admire Stephen Colbert and those kind of comedians that could take the insanity of what's going on and make it funny. But for me, my website, RDT Daily and Tara Buster and whatnot, that keeps me sane. What keeps me sane is showing up, is not giving up, is putting myself on the line. And I feel like that's what we do as, you know, in being in the media, because we have to get this out there. We don't have a Mercer family. You know, when I think about Breitbart, that propaganda rag, they were funded with $6 million by the Mercer family to start that propaganda channel. Now, who funds the progressive left? Nobody.
Wait a minute. You're not getting the George Soros checks either?
Exactly.
I'm still
waiting. I really do.
And so do I.
And, you know, the people at Progressive Voices, they went all over. And they did pitches to liberal millionaires and billionaires. And, you know, we still don't have the checks coming in. So for some reason, the one thing you could say about the right is that they understand the power of having a message, because they don't really have anything else. They don't have anything in reality to boast about. So they have to rely on branding and propaganda, and they're masters of it. So because we it's like, why are we apologizing for creating the middle class? I mean, that's what the progressives created, the American middle class. Progressives created this country while the conservative ancestors were pining to be trickled upon by the king. So we had that crazy liberal notion that you didn't need a king and an aristocracy. Unfortunately, you know, you see where we are right now. They're rebuilding the American aristocracy right before our eyes.
Yeah,
that's
with
what
our
that
money.
Tax cuts about.
With our money.
Yeah, exactly. And so you think that's what you want? You want to have Donald Trump Jr.? You want him to be your sovereign lord? These undeserving. They always talk about the undeserving poor. What about the undeserving rich? Did they really make that money legitimately?
No,
that,
they weren't
bloated fortune.
Members of the Lucky Sperm Club.
Exactly. And when Twitler tweeted to Elon Musk about the great American innovation, putting aside that Elon Musk, according to his brother, that they came here illegally as illegal immigrants. But what has Twitler ever contributed with his, when he got his trust fund? What has he really contributed to society? He hasn't innovated anything. He's come up with different ways to suck money from people in a casino, in a vitamin scheme. This
in
is
a
not
real estate
American
scheme.
Innovation. It's a joke.
No, he's a con man. He's Don the Con.
Exactly.
And
he is an epic con man, and that's one thing we could say about him. You know, I mean,
he conned enough people to vote for him to take over the White House, which is the sad reality that we're living in now. Tara Devlin is with us. What do you think of this Rob Porter situation? How, I guess, you know, like people surround themselves with like people. Did you hear Donald Trump defending this guy today?
Yeah, and every time something like that happens, I think, just when I think that the bar couldn't get any lower, there they go. It's like the, you know, you hit bottom and then the trap door opens and you're down another five levels into the dirt. And but he will get away with it. And I don't understand why he's so untouchable. And it's really kind of disturbing that you just, what we're witnessing is really kind of the end of the republic. Now, if we don't get it back, in the next election, in the midterms, if we don't really send an overwhelming message about democracy and how we're not going to take this compromised agent of a foreign dictator on top of being a completely unfit to lead a drunken conga line, much less a modern nation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't get it back, we're seeing just what it takes for a republic to fail, because all out, you know, throughout history, republics and democracies fail constantly, and and republics and democracies that have a longer history than we do. And
okay, now you're really scaring me.
What's that?
I said, now you're really scaring me. Yes.
Yeah.
Because it takes is one
the Roman
dictator,
republic.
Right?
What's that?
All it takes is one dictator.
Yeah, and the compliance of the Republican Party. For years I've been saying that in every Republican chest beats the heart of fascism, and now we see it. But I just really didn't imagine that they would be traitors and that they would be this much. This disgusting. I'm trying to find a word that they would be this complicit in the downfall of the country. You would think that they would stand up, that there'd be some decent Republicans, but they really don't like democracy. That's the problem with conservatives. They don't want it. They never did. They would much rather have a system where everybody kind of knows their place. And the rich run and rule and own everything. So that's what we have. And we could go through the motions of going and voting and whatnot, but it won't mean anything because one gerrymandered district at a time, one law at a time, what's happened. We've been separated further and further from the government. And, democracies require a level of commitment, and it also requires a level of maturity too. That's another thing that the Republicans don't have. They don't like diversity, you know. So,
well, then
anyway,
the Democrats need to step up and be the adults, and they do have to vote. This is,
yeah.
I mean, this is the one tool we have in our toolboxes that we need to take advantage of, and we need to be extra vigilant to make sure our registration is in order, and if we need identification,
right,
we have the right cards to bring with us when we go to vote. We've got to come out in such great numbers to overcome the obstacles they're going to put up in our path to try to steal the election. So we've got to be,
and that's it. Yeah,
we have no choice in the matter. It's come down to this. It is life or death. It is that serious.
That's right, and they're doing it already. That's why we have to overwhelm the vote. As you know, in the House of Representatives, the Democrats receive over a million more votes, mm-hmm. and they still don't control the House. I mean, that's not democracy. I'm sorry. This, and neither is, honestly, Twitler as the so-called president, because he didn't win. I mean, wouldn't you like to live in a system where the person who gets the most votes actually gets to serve? And it's kind of really disturbing, really, you know?
Yeah, well, one huge missed opportunity was when the Democrats controlled both houses of Congress and the White House for that one 2-year period. They should have done away with the Electoral College. The only way, we need to make the winner of the popular vote win the presidency, because this is some mm-hmm. bullshit. The last two Republican presidents both lost the popular vote.
Right. We're illegitimate, completely illegitimate. I mean, of course, Bush was a disaster.
Yep.
But I never imagined that they could ever top him. But, you know, it's really what you're saying is right. Of course, the Democratic Party in a lot of ways were complicit in the whole. I think that they really kind of tried to have it both ways. You have to be for the working people. You can't, be a little bit on the take with, you know, legal bribery or whatnot. Which is, I think that the Democratic Party, if the Democratic Party really wants to win elections forever, like FDR, you know, the only reason FDR didn't get elected for a fifth term was because he was dead.
Yes.
You know, not because he played nice.
And then they changed the law so that you can't do that anymore. And that ultimately
exactly.
was a good thing. Tara Devlin is with us. I know you consider Democrats the true patriots.
Yes.
You know, the Republicans are better in messaging. They're mm-hmm. they're better in taking, you know, as George W. Bush used to say, catapulting the propaganda. They've got better message writers. It kills yep. me when I hear the right wing channel on XM radio call itself the Patriot.
I know.
As if we're not patriotic. What are you doing about that?
That's right. Well, you know, it's really time for a paradigm shift. And Democrats have to retake the word patriot and own it, because we are the patriots. We created this country. We were the ones, the liberal age of enlightenment, who said that we don't need a king in an aristocracy. And we dared to dream of a democratic republic. Of course, it had a lot of flaws, as we know, you know. Obviously, women were nothing, and people of color were property, and so the more that we are actualizing the promises of our founding documents, that's when conservatives that they lose their minds. But we, as people who are capable of functioning in democracy, that's really what it is to be a patriot. The root of the word patriot comes from the Greek meaning fellow countryman. So you really can't call yourself a patriot if you turn your back on the people in your country. So as far as Democrats are concerned, we don't leave anybody behind. We don't leave any, forget the battlefield. We don't leave them behind in ignorance, without education, without health care, without a seat at the table. And I constantly talk about this on my show because it's the truth. And it's also a way to, I think, reach, if there are any sane conservatives out there, to message to them about that, it's a way to get through that, maybe the wall, because it really is about leaving nobody behind.
A number of them are coming around.
That's something to be proud of. What's that? Yep.
I said a number of former Republicans are coming around. I mean, you see them on MSNBC, on CNN, mm-hmm. sometimes too many of them. But, you know, when you see people like I'm not defending Bill Kristol by any means, but Bill Kristol and Steve Schmidt and even Nicole Wallace and Jennifer Rubin, the Washington Post writer of the Right Turn column, mm-hmm. who I've become a big fan of because she's, you know, she is a Republican or was a conservative Republican who's so disgusted with what these people have done to her party. You know, the hypocrisy is what's getting to her. I think she's still a conservative, but she just can't stand what she realizes they're not patriotic. They're going to be the downfall of this nation.
Right. And I think that if the Democratic Party was off the rails, like the Republican Party was, I wouldn't call myself a Democrat.
No.
You'd have to wake up and see what the hell is going on.
Yeah. Tara Devlin is her name. Her show, Tara Buster, is heard on the Progressive Voices Network Sunday evenings at 6 Eastern, although you record it live every Saturday at 7 on Facebook and YouTube.
Yes.
People can find you on Twitter at Real Tara Devlin and RDT Daily.
Thank you.
RDTDaily.com is the website. Anything else you want to get out
Thank
there?
Thank you. Well, I would like to, if people want to donate, because we're having a fundraiser at RDT Daily. RDT Daily used to be Republican Dirty Tricks. That's what it stands for. So you can get there by Republican Dirty Tricks or RDT Daily. But we're having a fundraiser, and anybody who donates to the website, because like we said, we don't have our Soros checks coming in yet. Right. We are giving out a thank you of a little a window cling that says, grab them by the midterm, that has a picture of my little cat, Francis Jr. on there. And if you go on the website, you'll see the design.
All right.
It's our way of saying thank you.
All right.
And, you know, for helping the independent liberal media stay afloat.
All right. So, Tara Devlin. They can find it at RDTDaily.com. Thank you so much. It was great to talk with you. And we'll chat again.
Nicole.
My pleasure. Take care, Tara.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Yeah, just giving other voices a chance to be heard. In a few minutes, we're going to check in with Alex Lawson of Social Security Works. I was over on their website at socialsecurityworks.org and came upon this video. I don't have the video for you, but I do have the audio from it to play while I get Alex on the line. And the whole message is strengthen Social Security, don't cut it. See, this is another thing that the Republicans are trying to do, is cut our Social Security. So, listen to the message.
Imagine if you had a business with no debt and it could pay every penny of its bills for the next quarter century. Well, you do. It's called Social Security. But I bet you've heard, Social Security is just a bunch of worthless IOUs. False. Young workers will never see a penny in benefits. Social Security is a liberal plot to destroy America. Sorry. False again. These are all lies we've been led to believe. The truth is, Social Security has been paying its own way since day one. We all pay in when we're working, so it's there for us and our families when we need it. Hey, we earned it, and no one should ever try to take it away. So, who wants us to think Social Security is failing? Meet Billy Bankster, Wall Street banker and pension fund raider. He's worth billions, but thinks you're the one with too much money. So, he wants to cut your Social Security. Yeah, and he runs with the same crowd that helped Bush try to privatize Social Security back in 2005. If these guys had privatized Social Security, we'd all be rich now. Actually, posed. So now they're trying a new tack. They're blaming the deficit on Social Security. But it's a lie. Social Security doesn't borrow any money. And by law, can't add a single penny to the deficit. These guys ran up the deficit. Remember? Tax cuts for the super wealthy. Two wars on Uncle Sam's credit card. Bailouts for bankers. Yeah, and now they want to take your Social Security away to pay for their mistakes. And what are they after? Helping your grandchildren? Your money. What they want is to get their hands on the Social Security surplus. Social Security isn't at risk, except from the people trying to destroy it. Look, Congress can fix Social Security without cutting the benefits you've earned, with a few simple adjustments that require Wall Street fat cats to pay their share. More than fair, given they're the ones who crashed the economy. Social Security is America's family protection plan, and it works. It works for America. It works for everyone. Tell us how Social Security works for you. In fact, tell the whole country. Strengthen Social Security. Don't cut it.
What a great message. Strengthen Social Security. Don't cut it. That's from our friends at Social Security Works, a video I found on their website, knowing that I was going to be speaking with Alex Lawson, the executive director of Social Security Works today. I thought it would be a good thing to play as we got Alex on the line. I think he's with us. Alex, are you there?
I am, and that's one of my favorite videos. That's our coalition version. I actually think the original version is even better because at the end it says, tell everyone, Social Security works.
Uh-huh.
And that is our strong message.
And it does, even though, as we see, despite the fact that the current occupant of the White House said over and over during the campaign that he was going to leave Social Security and Medicare alone, I happen to believe that that's one of the reasons he won. That's one of the reasons some of the people who, were a little reticent about the idea of supporting Donald Trump, but were dyed-in-the-wool Republicans, just couldn't bring themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton, that they gave him a chance because he did say he would leave Social Security and Medicare alone. Am I far off base on that one?
I think you're right on target. It was one thing he also said, Medicaid. Repeatedly from stage said that's what sets him apart from the other Republicans, and he broke their unwritten agreement amongst the Republicans that they wouldn't talk about those issues because they don't want the voters to know that all they do is spend their time trying to reach into our pockets and steal our earned benefits, and then give our money to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And Donald Trump understood, and since he is, a pathological liar, had no compunction against lying about it, but he understood the power. He understood that is what people don't want DC reaching in their pocket and stealing their Medicaid, their Medicare, and their Social Security. So he just lied from stage about it. Now, obviously, he turned around and it was, first number item agenda item number 1, 2, 3, and 4 was doing just that. But I do think that his painting himself as a different type of Republican, a right-wing populist, was what differentiated him from the crowd.
And he just he lied about his stance on everything. Either that, or he doesn't really have a stance on anything. He just lied and said what he needed to say to get into office. And then he's in so over his head that he's willing to roll over and do whatever the right-wing Republicans want him to do.
Yeah, I think I don't think he believes in anything except Trump.
Yeah.
And so it's whatever. He doesn't care. He has no actual stand on issues or anything. It's just whatever is going to serve his idea of what advantages him. And I mean, we've got more than enough evidence of that by this time in his administration that he does not stand for anything. But what that means is he actually just presents as a normal old Republican, right? Like, steal our money, give it to his criminal friends on Wall Street.
Yeah.
Because it's McConnell and Ryan who are running the game.
Exactly. As he said, he'll sign anything, although you can't even believe him on that. He's an odd character, and unfortunately, he's the one who's got the pen. Alex Lawson, I mentioned you are executive director of Social Security Works. What is Social Security Works for those who aren't familiar with the organization?
So we fight to protect and expand Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and to lower prescription drug prices. We've got an email list of 1.3 million people from around the country, as well as key organizers in a whole bunch of states, and we're working on getting that out to 50. And basically, we're a grassroots organization dedicated to protecting and expanding our earned benefits and also lowering prescription drug prices. When you go out into America and you talk about expanding benefits, like Social Security benefits, what you hear back all the time is that unless we do something about prescription drug prices, getting them under control, that's eating into everyone's benefits. So you could increase benefits, but it'd just be going into the pockets of the pharmaceutical companies if we don't do them together. It's similar to, we're going to talk about the summit coming up down there in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of one of the things that I try to bring to the table when I do things like this is we need to move to improve and expand the care for everybody. But at the same time, we need to lower prescription drug prices. We need to break pharma, because if you don't, you can just look at Canada to see that, you know, they got a great single payer healthcare system. It's leaps and bounds better than our non-system here, right? I mean, it's a sensible, moral and just system. It's still, they pay the second highest drug prices in the world, and still one out of five Canadians can't afford the drug that they're prescribed, right? I mean, so if you don't take on pharma and you have a single payer system, it's not like it's a guarantee that you're going to be able to access the prescription drugs that a doctor prescribes. So that was a long answer of what do we do and who we are. But hopefully now people can understand. And if I was too unclear, you can still go to our website at socialsecurityworks.org and find out more.
Yes, there's a lot of information there. You know, you mentioned the goal of lowering prescription drug prices. One of the few things that didn't make me almost puke at the State of the Union address was Trump's contention that's a goal of his. Now, he didn't clarify it. He didn't quantify it in any way. He just threw out the line, we need to lower prescription drug prices, and then he moved on to some other line that he clapped for. But that goes against everything else he's done. For instance, we have a new director, a new Secretary of Health and Human Services in Alex Azar, who came right out of Big Pharma. Do we have any reason to believe that their goal is going to be to lower prescription drug prices?
None whatsoever. There's no way that they are going to lower prescription drug prices. He's a liar. He's continuing to lie. He's good at lying. Like, he's actually good at it because, you know, it's, and what they do is he says, oh yeah, we're going to lower prescription drug prices and, you know, yay, that's good. And the way we're doing it, we're going to get this guy, Alex Azar, in here, and he's going to lower prescription drug prices. And, you know, he says that, and there's some amount of people who will just believe it. Like, oh, look, he put someone in place to lower prescription drug prices. But there's no way that's what Azar is going to do. I mean, Alex Azar is a guy who, last time he was in government under W. Bush, you know, he was supposed to be overseeing pharmaceutical malfeasance, bad actions by pharma. And what he did is actually just created a glide path for him right into a job at Eli Lilly, where he cut a settlement of the thing that he was overseeing when he was in government. That was what he was doing, right? He was actually setting up his private sector job where the people, we lose out, Eli Lilly wins, and Alex Azar gets a huge payday. As the head of the U.S. program, he ran Eli Lilly. It's the U.S. Wow. part of it, but it's that's basically what he was in charge of, Eli Lilly. Eli Lilly is the company that raises the price of insulin every single year, a drug that's over 100 years old, and yet every single year the price goes up, and that leads directly to people dying because they cannot afford insulin. This is the guy that's going to lower prescription drugs? Like, I don't think so. That's what he does. He raises prices. So, again, it's Orwellian doublespeak.
Yes.
However you want to say it, but there's absolutely no way that he is actually going to lower prescription drug prices.
I call it opposite world, but it just goes, you know, Trump lives in opposite world, and we've been in opposite world before. We sort of live there. It's like the gaslighting of America. Trump is a skilled liar, as you said, Alex, and in the gaslighting realm of it, he's a person who will go out and actively tell his followers that the sky is green, even though you and I know it's blue. He insists it's green, and they'll go along with it because Donald Trump said it. So they'll repeat the lies even when we're looking at the evidence to the contrary. It's pretty sickening.
Exactly.
You had mentioned the Florida Healthcare Summit. It's coming up a week from today and tomorrow, a week from tomorrow, in West Palm Beach at the West Palm Beach International Airport Hotel over there. You're coming down and you're going to be speaking about.
I'm sorry about this church bell that's going off.
That's okay. How healthcare is such an important it's a loud church bell, an important element of the social safety net, and how healthcare and social security are intertwined. So,
I'm sorry, I'm walking away from that loud bell. I do apologize.
That's okay. So are you giving a presentation at the Florida Healthcare Summit?
I am, and it's a really, this summit is a fantastic opportunity. It's based on action, so it's about activists coming together to figure out, you know, how are we going to build power to move forward in improving and expanding Medicare, creating a system where healthcare is a right for everyone in this country. And I will be talking about, you know, what we at Social Security Works, there are a lot of paths, but we want to actually say that any sort of lowering the age of Medicare is going in the right direction.
Yeah.
And so we see it the same way we fight with Social Security. You want to expand Medicare. So like the obvious one is like, let's move the Medicare age from 65 to 62. That should be a Republican idea, right? I mean, like, it's the earliest age you can get your Social Security benefits, so that's the age that you should qualify for your Medicare benefits as well. You know, we want to move it down to 55. We have some Democrats who've put that proposal in. Stabenow in Michigan has put that proposal forward. And we obviously don't think we should stop until we get to zero. That's what I'm going to be talking about. But I do think what I always try to highlight is that if you don't take on pharma at the exact same time, or in some respects even first, because breaking pharma doesn't cost anyone any money, right? I mean, if we actually regulate the prices of prescription drugs, that's just a cost saver everywhere. Mm-hmm. The only people who lose there is pharma. And so I'm excited to bring that to the table and try to really marry this drug price activism. I go around the country, and you should hear the fire that people have over their drug prices. And marrying that to this amazing uptick or groundswell or whatever it is on the fight for Medicare for all, so that these two movements, which have been somewhat separate, are working in tandem.
Medicare for all and or Medicare and Social Security, they're two separate programs, but they do go hand in hand. Basically, once you do reach 62, you can start collecting on Social Security. It kicks in for everyone at 65, and that's when you're eligible for Medicare as well. Why were they not put together from the get-go? Why were they envisioned as two separate policies? Do you know?
It's a great question. One thing is that full retirement age is actually moving up to 67. So it is different for depending on how old you are. And people can claim their Social Security benefits anywhere between 62 and 70. And when you claim it, actually changes the amount. The later, the more you delay it, the higher your benefit.
Right.
I'm a wonk, Nicole. I'm sorry I had to do it. But it's a beautiful, actuarially sound system. And that information should get out there more than it does, because too many people make wrong decisions about when to collect their Social Security because they believe the system's not going to be there for them because, you know, liars in the media, not truth tellers like yourself, but liars in the corporate media keep telling them it's going away. So anyways, got to put that in there. The truth of why they were envisioned as two separate programs is they weren't. The original vision of Social Security, and, you know, actually our president, Nancy Altman, is putting out a book very shortly on this. And it's we finished it. We got the cover. We're all done. The original vision was always had a national health system in as part of Social Security. I mean, the original vision of Social Security is much more expansive economic security for everyone in America, an ever expanding system of economic security for everyone in America. But because of political resistance, FDR and others removed the healthcare component of it, the national health system, which would guarantee healthcare for everyone. They removed it from the original Social Security Act. But you can read their own words about this. They 100% thought it was going to happen in the next administration.
Wow.
And then in the next administration, they thought it was happening in the next one. And it just kept going until you got to Lyndon Johnson. And the resistance from, you know, big hospital, big doctor, big pharma, everyone, big money, power, they thought, okay, well, let's start with universal insurance for seniors, not because it wasn't like, oh, yeah, well, let's just be nice to people 65 and over. It was because private insurers stopped insuring people at the age of 65. They wouldn't insure you if you were over 65, and they tried to figure out any way they could to get you off their books.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually wanted to have universal health insurance for seniors and for children, Medicaids. That was the conception. And then the next administration would lower the age of Medicare and raise the age of Medicaids, and in a few administrations, everyone would be covered. So Francis Perkins, who's basically the brains behind Social Security,
right. She
would be very proud of us for some things, but she'd be very disappointed that we still don't have a national health system.
Well, as are the rest of us. So that's the goal. One of the things that we'll be talking about next weekend at the Florida Healthcare Summit is the need for Medicare for all, universal health coverage. And there are people from all walks of that side of life who are going to be presenting. Alex Lawson of Social Security Works, you, of course, will be there. You don't know yet when you're speaking, though, huh?
I don't. You know, I like to keep things flexible. No, I'm the really easy one. Mike Fox from Progressive Democrats of America asked me to come down. I, of course, said yes. I love talking about expanding Medicare and lowering prescription drug prices. And wherever they put me, I get to come down for the whole thing. So I also come as an activist first. So I'm really looking forward to coming down there as a participant. And then when I do get to speak to the other participants, I'm always honored for being able to do that, because I still see myself entirely as an activist. So I'm just happy I get to go to these things.
Right. Well, I'm glad you're coming. The weather, I'm sure, is a lot warmer than it is up there in D.C.
Yes.
I'd be remiss, Alex Lawson, while I have you on the line, if I didn't ask about We Act Radio. You, of course, are the owner of Washington, D.C.'s We Act Radio. How are things going there?
Oh, you know, great. You know more than anyone the struggles with independent
business.
Media. It's
yes.
hard. It's
yes.
hard.
Yes, it is.
It's really hard. But, you know, I think we're just moving along slowly and steadily. I mean, there's a lot of pullback in the independent left media right now. You know, we just lost Workers Independent News. We just lost the Union Edge. A lot of that is because of the Janus decision, which is going to really eviscerate labor.
Mm.
At the same time, as you see these pullbacks, and then, you know, on the other side, you have Sinclair getting their right-wing propaganda into every single household in America, basically.
Yep.
But the need for independent truth tellers has never been more apparent than right now. So it's hard,
as you know.
But I feel like we just have to keep walking forward.
Right. Yeah, keep doing it. one foot in front of the other, and keep getting the message out. Because if we don't talk back to those voices, we'll be left with just those voices. And Sinclair is, as you said, soon, if they're not already everywhere, soon will be. And that's on top of Fox and Breitbart. And, you know, I was joking with Tara Devlin earlier. we're not getting the checks from George Soros. So I keep being told that, you know, it's coming, but I haven't seen it yet.
But it never comes. Yeah, that's the truth. The truth is that unfortunately, in this system that we have right now, you don't get rich telling the truth. It's lucrative to lie in the direction of power and money. But when you tell, when you speak truth to power, you have to be motivated. First of all, we do. We need to keep the doors open. So the funders out there listening, fund Nicole, fund We Act Radio. But you also do have to be motivated by a sense of justice and an understanding that before we can have anything like a political revolution, we need to have a media revolution. That if we can't tell our own stories, if we can't tell the stories of what's actually happening, then there's no way we can build power, because
right,
they'll control the reality.
Well, exactly right. You know, before I let you go, I have to bring up one last point about Social Security. As we're talking about funding, you know, funding what I do, funding We Act Radio, funding left-wing media, which we don't have the big money funders on the left that the right has. Social Security is funded, despite what the right-wing voices are trying to tell us. There is money in Social Security. We've paid into it. Our money is there, isn't it?
Yeah, $3 trillion. If that's bankrupt, sign me up. But no, you're exactly right. Social Security literally cannot ever run out of money. It is separately funded. You see it coming out of your paycheck. It's our money. There is currently a trust fund with $3 trillion of our dollars in it, and that's there to pay our benefits. No one gives anyone anything when it comes to Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. And in point of fact, in this country, no one gives anyone anything.
Mm-hmm.
But especially with Social Security, we earn it. Every paycheck, you see that money. That's our money. And all of these greedy liars on Wall Street, what they're trying to do is reach their hand into our pocket and steal our money. That's all that this game is. So why do they keep saying there's no money there? Why do they keep saying it's bankrupt and it's all been spent? Because there's one time one of their slacks accidentally told the truth in a New York Times article. The goal is to convince people, this is what she said, the goal is to convince people that they're going to get nothing so that they will accept less than they're owed. So really think about how cynical and evil that whole concept and their whole movement to convince people that Social Security is bankrupt. It's all aimed at just stealing our money.
When Al Gore talked about throwing, you know, putting the Social Security in the trust fund in a lockbox and throwing away the key, people made fun of him. He was absolutely right, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think that messaging really confused the issue a lot, though. I take a lot of issue with the way he talked about it, just because it made it seem like people could, that somebody could take money out of the trust fund for something other than Social Security. It's not ever true and never will be. Legally, that money is ours. It is right there. It's held in trust for the American people. It's not the government's money. It's the people's money. So he was correct in that the money is there and will always be there for us. But one of the big lies that we always have to fight against is people think, you know, good lessees, good people, people of good faith, they're just, they think that the money's been spent, and it hasn't. The money is ours, and it's there, and it's only for paying our benefits.
Well, that is good to know, especially as we get older. And you talked about, you know, people taking it at 62, sometimes because they're afraid it's not going to be there. Sometimes it's just that the people need the money. The situation is so dire.
100%.
As a 58-year-old woman, Nicole, who has a hard time you know, supplementing my income, which is what I get from doing this program. You know, I'm counting the days until I turn 62 because I could really use that money right about now. And I know it's money that I've paid into, and some years paid an awful lot into. Knowing that it's there is one of the things that keeps me going. We can do a whole other show on pensions another day, but, you know, luckily I do have an after pension out there for me, but that kicks in later.
Another time. I'm going to mute myself, Nicole.
No problem. Alex Lawson, I'll let you go. I'll see you down here at the Florida Healthcare Summit next week. Thank you so much. We can find Alex Lawson on Twitter at alaw202. And, of course, it's socialsecurityworks.org. Thank you so much, Alex, and I'll see you next week. And I guess Alex is already gone. And with that, we're done for the day. Yes, so socialsecurityworks.org is where you find him. For more information on the Florida Healthcare Summit, it's floridahealthcaresummit.org. I'll put up a link. And if you're in South Florida and want to go, I'll put up a link to get tickets, too. So come on out and get active. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you back here on Tuesday.